Good evening and welcome, everyone. What a blessing you are to be here for all of us. Your wondrous presences. So we come together once again to enter into our circle of great intention and to take our place, to engage in a conscious exchange and to listen deeply, to feed and be fed by the impressions given. May our work be food for lifting the consciousness of our world and ourselves. And tonight especially, we dedicate our time for lifting the suffering of all worlds. May it be so in the name of the Father and of the Son and in the name of the Holy Spirit. One, yet manifested as a many. Amen. Well, this evening we remember P.D. Ouspensky, someone we don't talk about a great deal, but who nonetheless was a very important person in the lineage of the work. He was born in 1878 and died on October 2nd, 1947. He studied with Gurdjieff intensely for 3 years from 1915 to 1918. And although they separated, he always promoted Mr. Gurdjieff's ideas. If you remember at the end of last year, towards one of our very last sessions, we read from Rodney Collins' book, The Herald of Harmony. And in that book, he talked about, I don't think he called them the prophets of our time, but a similar expression. He referred to Ouspensky as the Russian and Gurdjieff as the Greek, and he talked about their ways and what they left for us. So this is just an excerpt from some of the things that he said about Mr. Ouspensky that we did read last December. The Russian, firm and invisible, compiler of wisdom, master of silent experiment, unrecognized effect, new scientist, himself his laboratory, his pupils, retorts, and their contents, the work. Stern guide, most loving friend, austere in the sacrifice of a lesser prize, planter of seeds, the gardener of the soul. Soberly, year on year, the Russian taught, find what you want, be simple and sincere. By understanding, be freed from illusion and from fear. Remember yourself always and everywhere. Change destructive emotions into harmony. Study the laws. Serve faithfully the work. Remember yourself always and everywhere. Last words, reconstruct all. Now make all new again, from the very beginning. Thus only harmony may be achieved. Reconstruct all. Make all new again. Remember yourself, always and everywhere. It has to be so, that this is the way. So may it manifest within each of us. So now we have a time of preparation of our presence, our bodily presence, our attentive presence, our thinking presence, to prepare to receive the new impressions that are available for us. And what a rare privilege this is, both to have the opportunity to receive these gifts and to be among others who also desire such. How many people are interested in these ideas? Will I pay my part? Will I work for the future? So now we place ourselves here with intention and imminent trust, taking perhaps all the heaviness of life and lifting it in hope and love. In the midst of our own vulnerability and helplessness, with back upright, still and contained, we scan our bodies, perhaps noticing and then letting go of any points of tension and constriction. We breathe in deeply in every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and hope, all affirming, all denying, and we hold it as offering, reconciled as food for being. We lift it and ask that all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. In this breathing, we sense that all is flowing, becoming particles of God in this universe. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. So we now prepare to enter into Lectio Divina for a time of sharing a reading. And we will say these words three times with a silent pause in between each reading. Yet we do speak to those who are mature, but not a wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are passing away. Rather, we speak God's wisdom, mysterious, hidden, which God predetermined before the ages for our glory. Besides the languages recognizable by ordinary functions, there are other forms of language arising from and appealing to supernormal functions, able to convey an enormous number of meanings. Symbols, too, play a very large part, for they express analogies between a greater cosmos and a smaller, a law in one cosmos being used to hint at a law in other cosmoses. Some are of such a transcendent nature that there is no way in which they can be translated into human language. Our higher centers are divine sparks, that part of us that is a standing forth of God into visibility. But in our work of manifestation, we began at the beginning, that is to say, with the training of our hearts and the refinement of our emotional lives. Yet we do speak to those who are mature, but not a wisdom of this age, nor of rulers of this age who are passing away. Rather, we speak of God's wisdom, mysterious, hidden, which God predetermined before the ages for our glory. Besides the languages recognizable by ordinary functions, there are other forms of language arising from and appealing to supernormal functions, able to convey an enormous number of meanings. Symbols, too, play a very large part, for they express analogies between a greater cosmos and a smaller, a law in one cosmos being used to hint at a law in other cosmoses. Some are of such a transcendent nature that there is no way in which they can be translated into human language. Our higher centers are divine sparks, that part of us that is a standing forth of God into visibility. But in our work of manifestation, we begin at the beginning, that is to say, with the training of our hearts and the refinement of our emotional lives. Yet we do speak to those who are mature, but not a wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are passing away. Rather, we speak God's wisdom, mysterious, hidden, which God predetermined before the ages for our glory. Besides the languages recognizable by ordinary functions, there are other forms of language arising from and appealing to supernormal functions, able to convey an enormous number of meanings. Symbols, too, play a very large part, for they express analogies between a greater cosmos and a smaller, a law in one cosmos being used to hint at a law in other cosmoses. Some are of such a transcendent nature that there is no way in which they can be translated into human language. Our higher centers are divine sparks, that part of us that is a standing forth of God into visibility. But in our work of manifestation, we began at the beginning, that is to say, with the training of our hearts and the refinement of our emotional lives. So now I invite you to share what it is you heard from this passage or for the image. Jackie, good evening. Welcome.
Good evening. I heard symbols and analogies and cosmoses, relating to cosmoses. And what has been happening for me since Robin's Thursday night sharing is that I've returned to a study that I've studied several times with Dr. Nichols' Living Time. That entire area has always spoken to me as truth. And what I'm experiencing are dreams. And they are dreams in which people in our community going back in time are appearing. And they're not particularly communicating in words, but I know that they're there symbolically to communicate things in my own history that I need to know. And I'm reminded of Ouspensky, and as he left traces of his own life, the recognition that there, and I do believe that I will recur in this life, and that I need to leave traces, and that I am reaching an age when that is appropriate to do in a more conscious way. And when I walk under the stars in the morning, the stars speak to me, but they're not speaking in human terms, and my dreams don't speak in particular languages, but I know I'm being communicated with. And these are speaking to my higher centers, no doubt about that. And I'm grateful. I am grateful for all of our lessons.
What a gift. Thank you, Jackie, very much. Cynthia.
Well, first, I just want to say thank you to Jackie. That was very touching. So thank you. What happened to me when you began to read was that I had on my heart, I had just seen the devastation in Florida, and I was supposed to be in Florida on Tuesday, right where the storm hit, but of course canceled my flight. But so when the image came on the screen, it was such a beautiful image. All I saw was the crucifixion, the horizontal meeting the vertical over and over and over again in that picture. It was pervasive. And the light was coming through that cross, and it reminded me that how a suffering, how it touches transcendence. And that to me, and I couldn't hear anything you said. All I could see was that picture. And then when I came out of looking at the picture, I could hear you speaking about the symbols and the greater cosmos connecting to the smaller cosmos. And that's what I could see. And that's what I was thinking about, how kind of annihilation does that to us in a mysterious way, that that transcendence comes through in the most mysterious ways that are unseeable.
Indeed. Thank you for that beautiful sharing, Cynthia. Stephen, good evening and welcome.
Well, 2 weeks in a row now, it was the picture, not the words, that grabbed me. And what I saw was all this order, pews, geometric designs on the walls, all obeying a certain lawfulness, reaching up towards the light and the cross and the ceiling. And one thing I've been struggling with the Beelzebub classes was this discussion about Hazdemus, the kind of the second force kind of compromising the law agent in the world. And that it has high intellectual capacity. And I think I oversimplified it, thinking that it possessed high reason without conscience. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. But I think that the dance with between the higher centers, intellectual and emotional, is like a ping pong game. One stimulates the other, and they just rock upward. And it's not like one leads the other or the other leads the other. I think the emotional center is important to that, the higher emotional center. But I don't think the has-namest can ever touch higher intellectual center. It's always informatory, very well, high capacity for cunning and cleverness, informatory intellectual center, but never touches, because there's emotional parts of intellectual center. So I'm seeing in that diagram is that they're working together, they're pulling each other up, supporting each other with structure and design and lawfulness, but also flowing with that energy right up the cross. So that's all I got.
Wow. Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you. Oh my goodness. What a wealth of gifts here we have. Therese.
Good evening.
Hello. Welcome.
If I may speak about the image, yes. My experience of the image. Actually, before the pandemic, every time I went to Japan to do my research work, I'm an architectural historian. I used to attend the Sunday Mass in that building, Kenzo Tange's St. Mary Cathedral. And the very first time I stepped into that building, I just remembered that all my words and reasons fell away. I'm relatively new to the work, so I can't say if it was an experience of higher center, but definitely I wasn't thinking about architecture. It felt like a divine miracle. And it's an architectural miracle as well. It was built in 1964, before the computer era, and it had a very complex geometry. Actually, the geometry converges to a cross shape at the top if it's looked down as a plan. And I remember when I was there the first time, I understood what all AWE meant, or at least that's how I understood it. And when the pandemic first started, they started to stream their mass online. So I also attended the mass online in that building, although the experience was different. So I just thought I would share it.
Yes. What a wonderful sharing, Therese. What a gift it is that you actually abided in that building and sharing it with us. What an extraordinary space it is, and that you're pursuing architecture, which is one of the finest of the art forms, I believe, because of its ability to evoke such wondrous impressions within us or not.
I've been participating in CCH remotely, so I've been wondering what it would feel like to step into the church, the physical church, and hopefully I'll have a chance to in the near future.
May I ask where you live? What?
I am in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Minneapolis. Well, please come and visit us, particularly now at this time of the year, which is actually beginning to be a bearable time in terms of weather. So it's so good that you're with us and sharing your gifts. Thank you. And dear Bonnie and Gay and Jim, we are past our time actually to move into another portion of our evening, but come back, share again in this section, since it's undoubtedly related for the week. And so I will now turn our time over to our beloved friend Mimi Conroy, who will again accompany us on our continuing journey into higher body. And Mimi, good evening and welcome to you. And maybe some of our friends would like to share during this portion of our evening. Welcome.
Good evening, work friends. So any of you that attend journey groups, I'm sure were enlivened by our work last week. And we were asked to listen to something sorrowful that opens your heart and helps you feel something higher, a finer energy. And it gave us some examples and asked us to recall the experiences of higher emotional center, write about it, and share what you learned. And this gives us an extraordinary opportunity to open this work on higher intellectual center with a full bloom of our emotional center. So, who would like to share? Jim, please. It's nice to see you again.
There we go.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I would like to share on the music from last week on the nature of daylight. It spoke to me of kind of a profound sadness in this world, where darkness kind of surrounds us, though it can never quench the light that is coming through. And I think it's a sublime, it's the light that makes that song or that music sublime. And it reminds me of Jesus, sent to be the light of the world. And his life snuffed out by the darkness, then raised from the dead in love to bring new life, spiritual life to those who let the light in. And it is the nature of light, or it is the nature of darkness, that it can, that it spreads and reduces light to, it can reduce light to a flicker, yet the light always comes back, because by its nature it is the light of God. And the darkness divides, the light draws us together. And this is why, even in profound sorrow, we can have kind of an inner conviction that those things, though those things are not right, everything is going to be all right. And that is the source of our joy and the source of peace in our life. That's what I got. A beautiful song, beautiful music.
Thank you, Jim. Margaret, please.
Hi, Mimi. On the nature of daylight, this is a very compelling instrumental, and it really moves the higher emotional center and touches the essence of our very being. There was a violin, especially, that comes forth as a soloist, kind of in the orchestra, and it comes in and out. And it reminded me of waves in an ocean. If you're watching the sun rise on the ocean and the waves come in and out. And I was filled with a divine blessing. The same feeling that I get when I hear Gurdjieff's music right before communion. There's a high note there and I have to close my eyes. It's so beautiful, and even more beautiful when I found out that it was Gurdjieff music. I didn't know at first. I'm just a year in the work. So I saw day. To me, the emotional center is just very fine vibrations, and it doesn't always have to be sorrow. It can be divine, just something inside you that it may bring you to tears, but it's very special. We have to take care of it. Those fine vibrations, that we have them every day. And if we're balanced in all of our centers and we don't use up that fuel that we get from God with negative emotions and anger or worry, then it's there. That hydrogen 12 is there for us to use and to enjoy. And I want to keep working on that.
Well, and Marianne reminded us of P.D. Ouspensky's quote, you know, that we work everywhere with everything. We're students of life. And if I can make self-remembering my aim, there's a chance for lining up, you know? So it's beautiful, very, very beautiful. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Bonnie, hi.
Hi, Mimi. I had an experience with my high emotional center, I believe. It started out with music at a celebration of life. And there were several hymns that were very touching. They also had been at both my parents' funerals, but it brought up such a feeling of overwhelm in my emotional being that I was really brought to tears at both as a memory and as what was currently happening. It took a few days to get a handle on processing that, because it was kind of, it was a touch of grief, a bit of a conscious shock that ended in a feeling of joy and healing that came forward, and that it made me, there was something inside, like the aquifer that Peter was talking about. It brought the tears up, but it was a feeling of joy from that as well. That also led to the necessity to do a full stop after I was done with the service, and just kind of get an awareness of that, what was happening, and not identifying with the situation as, is it being me? It was not me. It was this emotion that would pass like river thoughts. And then it took a little bit further step, and I started, thanks to friend Sharon Johnson, I started to count backwards and got my mind to stop thinking these thoughts, any kind of thoughts whatsoever, and left some space more beautiful processing. And I also got out my piano and I started to play and took a walk and outside and a number of things like that. I wrote some cards too for people that did help this week in processing that what was overwhelming me in the emotions. And I definitely felt my higher emotional center working, and it really, music and all the rest just have made a big difference, I think. And yes, the tears did come, and yes, that was a big relief as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. I just feel the gift of tears, you know. In my journey group this week, the word bittersweet often came up. And, you know, at one point in time, many years ago, Tim had us study. There was a paper, and it was, I think, the European concept of suffering. Because as Americans, we really don't know how to suffer. And the work teaches us, you know, to consciously suffer rather than just what we do unconsciously. So it is bittersweet. And the tears are, you know, but it's all mixed up into one beautiful, expansive experience. Thank you, Bonnie, so much. Pamela Cook. Hello, West Texas.
Hello, dear Mimi and everyone. Well, I really resonated with what Pamela said last week about higher emotional center being the divine indwelling in us. And as I was reflecting this week on the various times that I've experienced higher emotional center, whether it was through music, nature, worship, Taizé worship specifically, all of those things, I realized that the common experience for me was a physical sensation of finer energy. Mm. That finer energy really permeating and rising in my body. And there was it was like an effervescence that rose, and it made me think about, you know, reaching through level 24 toward level 12, and knowing that level 12 is always reaching down to us, is, you know, God's goodness and love is always pouring down. And Gurdjieff says that higher centers are always speaking to us, and yet we just live our lives and are blinded most of the time. And what a rare, wonderful opportunity it is to have those experiences and to recognize them, that it's that divine indwelling that is just bubbling up within us. So that was my experience this week.
Yeah, people often talk about bubbles or effervescence, that rarefied, shall we say. Yeah, we can only point and touch and remember. And I came to last week and this week with a very humble heart, lest I speak like I know something, you know. So, but we do know what we love, you know, and that's such a beautiful thing. Nice to see you, friend.
See you.
Gay, hi.
Hello, Mimi. Hello, everyone. It sounds like most everyone that has shared tonight has been touched by music. And I wanted to share an experience that happened to me long, long, long ago when I was about 10 years old. My mother took me to a symphony concert in Oklahoma City, and I had just recently started piano lessons. And most of those symphony concerts, it seemed, were really, really long for a 10-year-old. And but this particular night, the orchestra played this piece, and there was something about that piece. I can still sing the melody to you. And something happened to me. Something just literally lifted me out of my seat. I had never had an experience, such a visceral experience to music before. And of course, at 10, I didn't have the language for it, the context for it. I simply knew at that moment that there was something that happened. Something really different happened. And in the reading tonight, I don't know if I can quote an example, but it was the last two paragraphs that said, the experience of higher centers is like a spark. It's like God standing there, you know, like in us. And then it says at the last paragraph, and we still have to do our work, which I love that. And interesting, I ordered a book today that I'm will be reading with a friend, and it's called, let's see if I get this right, Up from Below and Down from Above. So it all fits together to me, but that experience at 10 was one of those experiences that was unforgettable. Thank you.
Thank you, Gay. Yes, I'd like to share an experience that I was able to witness and feel. In my last workings in the hospitality industry, I worked as a house manager and a chef at a recording studio. And so I would take care of the bands and house them, and we had concerts there and so on and so forth. We had a band that flew in from Ireland and just love this band's music. And it's, you know, it's Irish, so you got the sorrowful part of it. And so when the band landed in America, before they would fly on to Austin, the violin player stepped back and fell over luggage and broke her collarbone. And I think went to the emergency room, got on the plane, came to Texas, and we, you know, have a wounded person that's a pretty major part of this beautiful band. So nothing was said to anyone other than the staff. So nobody knew. There were 150 people at this concert. No one knew that she had injured herself. She never once grimaced, never once really let on that she was challenged in any way. And I'm just watching this concert just in awe of this woman. And so here comes the song that's the one I love. It is a song of sorrow that is just extraordinarily beautiful. And it is almost completely the violin. And I'm thinking, how is she going to do it? Because the violin, she would go like this to put her violin up, and that's the one that was broken. And never grimaced when the violin went down on her shoulder and began to play. I have never seen such a response people were openly weeping. I had tears. And what came to me was that she played her suffering. And when I asked her later, after everything was over, she said, I couldn't feel it while I was playing. She said, but I almost fainted when it stopped. And I'd done many concerts there and had never experienced something like this. And I will never forget it and the beauty of it. And I have listened to it many times on the CD, which she was not injured. It still is a beautiful piece and it does open up emotional center, but nothing like that night when she played her suffering. And so I believe that that suffering is part of this. And if we learn in the work how to suffer consciously, our lives change immensely. Thank you. Karen, hi.
Well, as is usual, I hadn't read the homework or hadn't read the email. I was in Italy this past week, but you know, once you're a work student, the work comes to meet you where you're at. Mm-hmm. And we had a profound experience with music and art. We had in our tour, there was a cemetery that we were going to go by, and Don and the tour bus driver had been there before, and they decided to take us through this American. American soldier cemetery. Thousands of Americans were buried there. This was the most beautiful cemetery I've ever seen. Even here in the United States, where we honor our soldiers, our cemeteries are not this beautiful. Like, the Italians really regarded the Americans who gave their lives. So here we are. The tour bus driver takes us through the cemetery very slowly. Like, it, you know, it's massive. So we're going through it very slowly. And, you know, I'm not crying yet. Like, I'm like holding it in, like just experiencing it, the emotional experience of it. And everybody was quiet on the bus. And one of the passengers, one of our fellow travelers, Tim Wooten, pulled out his harmonica. He started playing Amazing Grace. Mm. And it was the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. And I don't much care for harmonica, but I've never experienced anything like that in my life. And then, you know, at the end of the evening, we always went through what was our best part of the day. Everybody that was on the bus shared that that was the best part of their day, is going through that cemetery. It's like objective art, where everybody feels it and knows it in the exact same way. So the work came, the homework came to meet me. It was there. And I can tell from reading the homework of this coming week, there's plenty there to share from the trip as well, you know, especially with architecture. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you,
thank
Karen.
Thank you, Tim, if you're out there.
For being so vulnerable and helping our emotional centers expand. Thank you, dear. Tracy, hi, Colorado.
Hi, Mimi. It's so good to see you and everyone. Karen kind of gave me a great segue to my experience of accessing the higher emotional center has always happened during moments of externally considering. And it's like an externally considering that there's probably a psychological disorder term for the way I do it sometimes, but just getting so deep into feeling what the other person is experiencing. And my most vivid memory of this was the Tiananmen Square protesters in 1989 or something. And I was trying to explain to a friend, we were in college at the time, and that's not really an age where you practice a lot of externally considering. At least my friends and I didn't, but I was trying to explain to her what these students were going through and why they were doing it as I understood it. And I just started bawling. And it was just, it was like I felt like I was above my personality and I was just connected with those Chinese students. And I can almost start crying about it now. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just, so I can do that with, really emotional, in-depth news stories, or not really TV shows, but, or the friend who's had someone pass away. If I just, I didn't feel like I did anything special to access it. It was just there. So for me, higher emotional center is about being connected in the greater humanity of we're all here and we all need to love each other.
So, well, and that's, that's objective consciousness. That it objective consciousness recognizes unity.
Yeah.
And a lot of things come to play, but it's just, what other, there's many places that teach, empathy and, but external considering grows with you, doesn't it? I remember when I first started doing it, it was kind of now I'm externally considering. Now it just does meet, so that's the beauty of the work, is it meets us where we are. And look, with all of us remembering these moments just as clearly as if they happened just a day ago.
Yeah. And I think for me too, there's a aspect of, as a one on Enneagram, people who are being unjustly treated, or something like that. I get the Karen with the report about the cemetery. I could see that too, if I was there, because those soldiers were fighting such evil and injustice, So that's how I access higher emotional center. Maybe I should try music.
There's all avenues.
Yes.
The music is a wonderful thing. And, I also recall when the Dalai Lama came years ago and a bunch of us from the church went to see it at UT in the basketball place where they watch the basketball. And when he walked out, I couldn't breathe. Mm. All of a sudden, my body was too small. Like my neck, it just was too small to house the energy that I received that day. Mm-hmm. I don't know what other people's experience were, but, clearly if we just put ourselves in the place of what if, what if. Thank you. So nice to see you.
You too.
So I would like to talk about the picture too, because I'm so happy to hear that it's a real place. But the process in which we went through to build the sanctuary, Our sanctuary is shaped very much like that. The cross and the opening in the roof, the slanted, beautiful, beautiful wood. How the not just the cross, but the where we speak from and the communion table. And so for those of you that don't live here and that haven't seen our sanctuary, it's extraordinary in that way. And I've had a number of extraordinary experiences being in there on holy holidays and different times. We welcome you all to come and visit and be part of this in a physical way. Jack. Good evening, Jack.
Yes, I'm here, I believe.
Okay, good.
So I work for the Board for Architectural Examiners. I've been 21 years there. And one of the sweetest things I can remember is at a architecture convention, an architect who designs churches. And the question was, what's the secret to designing a church? And he said, it must appear to be bigger on the inside than on the outside. And so I drive by and I see this little teepee looking thing on the side of a hill. And I walk in to the sanctuary and it's just overflowing with space. And he nailed it. And our sanctuary nails that concept. It's so much bigger on the inside than on the outside. That's all I got.
That's a good one. It'll preach. Thank you, Jack. Well, that was lovely. Is there any other desire to speak? All righty. So we'll move right on into the Higher Intellectual Center. Ruh-roh. And I would like to take you on a little bit of a trip. And our curriculum, as I said last week, is really extraordinary. I just pale in comparison. And so I ask you again to go back and explore it, and especially after the story I'm about to tell you. And it is a story about Higher Emotional Center and Higher Intellectual Center by people who feed us today. And it is, we've had a reminder, some of you may not know about Boris Muravyov. But you can read it in our curriculum this week. Now, Boris was born, he basically around the same time that Ouspensky was. And he had a long military career. He was Russian from Crimea, had a long military career, but would often talk about esoteric things. So he quit. At some point he left the army, or he was in the Navy, I believe. And he met P.D. Ouspensky. And when P.D. Ouspensky, also being Russian, said, you must meet Gurdjieff, and set Muravyov up to meet Gurdjieff. And he would, in fact, be a longtime friend of Ouspensky's. Later in his life, he wrote Gnosis, which is what's quoted in our curriculum this week. Gnosis is a gift that came to us long ago in the 10th man school. And the story about how Gnosis came to us is one of higher emotional and higher intellectual center. People that study esoteric studies knew that Muravyev had written these. He also called them commentaries. There's three of them, volume 1, 2, and 3. They're commentaries on his work with his groups. So they're very much like our commentaries. They used them while he had groups and met with groups for many years. But when he died, they just fell away and they actually got lost. Now, we'll bring in our friend that brought us Gnosis, and that is Robin and Lillian Amos. And they knew of this three volume set and knew of the rarity of them, but nobody knew where they were. And so Robin's work was to find them. I don't know, I can't remember the exact, and the ones of you that know me know it's kind of dangerous with me telling stories, but I'm keeping as close to the bone as I can here. So Robin was in an apartment in Paris, France, and he was talking to the person that owned the apartment about these rare books and how they were looking for them. Well, they were on the shelf in that apartment. And they were written in French. And I believe Robin left with them that day. And that was in, I think, 1987 when they found those, which Robin and Lillian had already started Praxis Institute and had, Tim had made contact with Robin. And Robin flew here to study with us, Robin and Lillian, a couple times in the 80s and 90s. Well, probably the 90s, I would say. And so it was Robin and Lillian and two of their friends translated, edited, and published Gnosis that we are able to have today. And so through this story, we've got, Boris Muravyev and P.D. Ouspensky, born late 1800s. They meet later. He meets Gurdjieff. P.D. Ouspensky, Robin Amos studies with P.D. Ouspensky. And so all of these messages are traveling through Europe and the British Isles. And how do they find their way to a small school in Austin, Texas? Tim was always reaching out, and people were fascinated by this school that was a fourth way school and a church. So Robin Amos was fascinated and wanted to come check us out. And so because of that, we have connections to these people that really, really were brave and had Herculean strength and perseverance to find and bring this teaching to us. How does that happen? How do all of us know to be here tonight? It's magnetic center. And so this church has been and does facilitate higher center work when we all lean in together and use our will, which the work, makes our will stronger and stronger and stronger as we go. Will to this. So I had no idea Marianne was going to honor P.D. Ouspensky, but we're going to hear a little bit from him tonight. That's all right with you. All right, he's just talking about the emotional center and higher centers here. And I'm going to start kind of in the middle. He's been talking about instinctive center, and now we're going into the emotional center. The emotional center can work with hydrogen 12. In reality, however, it very seldom works with this fine hydrogen. And in the majority of cases, its work differs little in intensity and speed from the work of the moving center or the instinctive center. In order to understand the work of the human machine and its possibilities, one must know that apart from these things, I'm sorry, these three centers and these connected with them, we have two more centers fully developed, properly functioning, but they are not connected with our usual life, nor with the three centers in which we are aware of ourselves. The existence of these higher centers in us is a greater riddle than the hidden treasure which men who believe in the existence of the mysterious and the miraculous have sought since the remotest of time. And now we're going to talk about a little bit about objective consciousness. Objective knowledge, the idea of unity included, belongs to objective consciousness. The form which expresses this knowledge when perceived by subjective consciousness are inevitably distorted, and instead of truth, they create more and more delusions. With objective consciousness, it is possible to see and feel the unity of everything. But for subjective consciousness, the world is split up into millions of separate and unconnected phenomena. Attempts to connect these phenomena into some sort of system in a scientific or philosophical way lead to nothing, because man cannot reconstruct the idea of the whole starting from separate facts, and they cannot divine the principles of the division of the whole without knowing the laws upon which the division is based. Now, this I'll just start with this anyway. This is also in the homework to read. This is book four, 1438, Contact with Higher Centers. And it's a very short commentary. So please, please, please read this. So, because the teachings of the work are designed by conscious minds, to intimate what we would know, see, and understand at once if we were in contact with higher centers. And very few people assimilate the teachings of this work, either in their minds or their hearts, but leave them in their memories where they are useless. And as a result, the teachings of the work do not change their ways of thinking. That is, they do not produce metanoia or change of mind. With our usual ideas of life gained through the contact with the senses, we cannot undergo the transformation or new birth that the work indicates. New ways of thinking are necessary, and the work gives them down in notebooks. We have quite new forms of truth to reach higher centers. We have to have a new language. We have to have new ways of thinking, which have nothing to do with the world as seen. The truth that is coming from higher centers continually cannot reach us because of the falsity and pretense, which only insight resulting from self-observation can penetrate. But other powerful factors can come in here, such as sheer ignorance and totally wrong ideas of ourselves and our meaning on earth. For these later, the ideas and teachings of the work become a remedy. And only if they find soil in which they can grow and so change the mind, that is the whole way of thinking. This, as you know, is metanoia, which means change of mind, and is so wrongly translated in the New Testament as repentance. If the idea of the work lie only in the memory, they are useless, or rather, the man is useless. The work cannot help him, even if he knows it from beginning to end formatorily, nor can anyone help him. One of the work octaves put forward by Mr. Ospinski was do, hearing the ideas of the work, evaluating them. Re, application of ideas of the work to oneself. And me, we come to the narrow place, the realization of one's own difficulty. And he says here, and I love this sentence, the work will not pass into your will and so cannot change your being. The work cannot pass into your will if we don't line up for this to happen. And as I remember myself as a young work student, you know, all of these things were so new and grew in me. And my ideas of higher centers were just what they could be at that time. And so here we are with each other in this beautiful school of love. And all that we can ever be guilty of is falling asleep. And because we're here in this school with each other, we help each other wake up in those moments. And as we've heard tonight, all of these extraordinary connections to higher centers shared in the cloud of the Journey School has lifted. Do you have anything you'd like to share now? If I left any space for anything. Nicole, hi.
Hi, Mimi. I'm having my emotional experience just witnessing you here on the screen and thinking about the beauty of when I began work years and years ago, you were one of the teachers, and how beautiful it is to see you here back again. And it seems like you've changed, I've changed, and it's just beautiful. I see you and I just come to tears. I wanted to thank you for sharing the gnosis. I guess it was like year two or probably three. Donald will, I went to Donald. It was like candy to me. I read Gnosis 1 and I don't know, I guess I got it from the church. It was pretty hard to find Gnosis 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, he's like, you might want to read it a little slower, Nicole, so you can absorb it. And I'm like, I can't put it down. But it is funny to hear you say it's kind of like the commentaries, because by the time I got to Gnosis 3, it was like really deep for me.
Yeah.
But what a fabulous story to hear that that was translated by someone who, you know, participated. And also the lady who lives in Minneapolis, you know, and her sharing about her experience and that was just so, again, miraculous that she's here with us while we show that picture. And thank you so much to her for sharing. So thank you.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think I really got a message when I saw my friend Gay up on the stage at church talking about the Journey School, and I had just come back, and I thought, oh Lord, have mercy. I was in the school for 30 years. What? And I looked up at the stage and there's Gay and Marianne and all the people that had that were extraordinary stewards for this church while I was gone. And I saw, it's time for me to come back, because you know what Tim used to say about me? That I was the poster child, that he thought if she can get it, I can teach this to anybody. So let's have fun, you know? Let's trip the light fantastic here with each other. And what a joy. Joy. And yeah, we've grown, and I can see it. You can see it. So we're telling our new friends, hang on. If Mimi can get it, anybody can. Thank you, Nicole. So good to see you.
Good to see you.
Renee, hi.
Hello. I'm just going to anchor outside myself how I experience higher intellectual center, and we'll see maybe how this changes some through the week is engaging the homework. I guess at the formatory level for the intellectual center, it's normally my observation is it's normally just a lot of knowledge. It's a lot of thinking, engaging other people, minds talking to minds, everybody sharing what it is they know, that they've read, they've heard, and it can get competitive at times. And it doesn't matter what the venue is. It's been in academic settings I'm in, it's been in professional settings, churches, spiritual communities. And it's almost sometimes as if we're sharing more knowledge of what we know or what they know, or IQ getting higher, you know, somebody's IQ is higher, that we somehow elevate that regardless of the venue. And quite frankly, it just becomes a big game of mental masturbation, really. And yet when I move into a higher intellectual center, there's always an aspect of higher emotional center being present along the way, that is a quality that
needs to be there. However, it doesn't happen in the reverse, that there isn't a, I can witness to the fact that higher intellectual center is happening, but there's no emotional center, higher emotional center component. In my experience, I haven't seen that reverse take place. Maybe I will at some point, I don't know. So when it does move to that higher intellectual center, there is no mentating, there's no thinking, it's seeing. It's a quality of seeing for me. And if I find the mind starting to think, I know I've dropped out of that. That there's an interconnectedness, there's a relationality to it. There's a lightness as I'm seeing things happening on World 48. Because it's being held in the container of reality with a big R. And so that lightness is there, and that universality is there as the reality, and then the particularity just is. It's just happening. And so there's always an external, and this is something I want to take into my week and observe if I do find myself in these spaces, that at least from memory, there's always an external component to this, that it engages because I'm in conversation with people, or I'm writing, I'm doing something that it brings it outside of myself. And that's where that interconnectedness, it's almost like you're stepping into the flow by externalizing it, and playing with the particularities, but all the while knowing of the universality. So that's what I'll be doing this week.
Amen. Raymond?
Or Rusty.
Rusty.
Rusty. Yeah. My real name is Raymond, but I had red hair when I was a baby. And my grandmother gave me the name Rusty.
Welcome, Rusty.
It's great to be here. And I've just had a moment this weekend that I wanted to share. I've got a diagnosis of leukemia, and I was checked into the MD Anderson Hospital Friday week before last. And the idea was that I would be there for 2 weeks and then do 2 weeks of outpatient stuff in Houston. And 5 days into it, the doctor comes in and said, I think we're ready to release you. And but you still need to stay in Houston, but, you know, just get ready and blah, blah, blah. And the one side effect I've had from the chemo has been constipation. And so I had an incredibly difficult struggle last Saturday trying to move something. And it just was one of those long nights. And it was a great opportunity to feel into the difference between pain and sensation. But Sue comes in the next morning to the hospital ready to leave. And I say, Sue, I think we're going to be here. I don't want to leave until this gets settled. And she said, why don't you listen to the Journey School class? Maybe that might help. And so here I am on the pot with the Journey School going on, and I'm feeling better already. And then they had that beautiful share by the lady that was celebrating her 18th birthday.
Yeah.
And you know, you're ready for the shoe to drop, and it was her 18-year anniversary of her stem cell transplant.
Yes. Is what Rusty.
What I'm looking toward. And it just moved. I mean, it just, everything moved inside of me. And I was like a new man after that. But that beautiful chair, and just took on a resonance that I could not even begin to recreate or anything else. And I was out of the hospital in 2 hours. And thank God for the Journey School.
Well, you made me cry.
Well, I cried. I cried too. Tears of joy.
Isn't it amazing?
It is.
Oh, Rusty.
It is.
Well, blessings, my friend. You have all of our prayers.
I feel it. I mean, it's just been overwhelming, you know, the support that's going to come my way. And we've got a road ahead, but I could not imagine feeling better about what lies ahead. And I just thank everybody for their prayers and wishes and everything else that has manifested itself over the past week and a half. It's been wonderful.
Amen.
Yeah. Amen.
Well, y'all can read the homework for next week, right? It's just going to take us right out of our heart. So, Marianne, it's all you, girl.
Yes, there's nothing more to be said at this point except thank God. Thank you, Mimi, for such a wonderful evening of higher emotional and higher intellectual center, and for everyone who shared, which is all of us because we're here. And Rusty, God bless you. I had a reading from Rodney Collin, which I'll save, except that he says, grace comes from above. By keeping our grace, we have all leave all the heaviness of this world and keep the lightness of grace. So it may it be with you and with all of us in the coming days and the coming week until we can join together again. Let us pray aloud, knowing that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep